Hi, I'm Michael Senoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive.
I mean, look, what you're telling me is you've got a collection of letters that it's taken you 30 years to put together, and you've got a little money-making system for your chiropractic business. Every time you invest 50, as long as you take them through the system, you pull out 2,000.
That's what we're doing, right, yeah.
And you've been doing that for
20 years.
20 years.
Hey, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called, Can You Really Make $2,000 for Every $50 Just by Getting Your Direct Mail Right? Dr. Greg Nielsen owns a regular, nothing special chiropractor's practice in a small town, but he's raking in the dough. And it's all because he has something the other guys don't, a solid marketing background. Dr. Nielsen has become a master at direct mail. He studied it under Dan Kennedy and perfected it with more than 20 years of trial and error. And in this audio interview, you'll hear all about his best stuff. He says when it comes to direct mail, don't overanalyze things. You don't have to get it right. You just have to get it going. But Dr. Nielsen says with Dan's help, he's got his direct mail campaigns down, so he was bringing in $2,000 for every $50 he was spending. And in this audio interview, you'll hear how he did it using photos of his staff, I Love Lucy episodes, and Lumpy Mail to come up with a way to make at least a 20% response rate and even larger return. You'll also hear the hidden benefits of getting your staff involved with your direct mail campaigns to create a behind-the-scenes ongoing storyline. Customers will look forward to seeing what you and your staff are up to this time. You'll hear the almost too crazy to believe it works reason Dr. Nielsen puts a toaster oven in his back room and has a staff member bake cookies as part of her job. You'll hear about the fastest known way, and possibly the only way that works, to get the press to your business whenever you need them, and other public relations secrets. You'll hear a little known fact, there are only 4 basic personality types. If you learn how to recognize each type and treat each person, your marketing will become almost effortless. You'll learn why Dr. Nielsen never tries to sell the big programs when he first meets clients. He says it's like saying, I like you, let's get married on the first date. And his foolproof plan for comfortably sending his patients down the sales funnel without them even knowing it. You also hear how to use soap opera marketing, a series of fun-to-read sitcom-like letters that'll have people on your list waiting by their mailbox. This works for email inboxes, too. You'll hear examples of Dr. Nielsen's best bumpy mail campaigns, from the props he uses to the letters he writes, along with how to keep costs down. You'll also hear the best ways to keep in touch with customers, warm up your database, and generate more sales, even after customers have long moved on. Look, Dr. Nielsen didn't just study under Dan Kennedy. He paid extra to have the marketing legend look over his direct mail letters, and Dan always replies with, "Why are you even bothering to send these in? There's nothing I would change." In this day and age, it's way too easy to ignore mail, so most of it gets thrown away before it gets open, unless you create something people look forward to receiving. And in this audio interview, you'll hear how to do that. Now let's get going.
Greg, you're a chiropractor, correct?
Correct.
How long have you been a chiropractor for?
20 years. Yeah. So here's something that's kind of interesting. This very first letter in the book here, this is a $500,000 letter. Just, we want to give you a free visit. It's got like 2 red tickets on the bottom. So we first mailed this in the year 2000, and we got 30 new people in January from it. Now, those are worth $2,000 each, so $60,000 right there. And so we gave them two red tickets that were stapled to the bottom, just like you get at a carnival or a fair. And what happened is that one ticket gave them a free visit, see what's in it for them, and the other one you give to a friend, and for like $10 they can come in as a new patient. And so we mailed that out to the whole list. That was like 3,000 we sent that first year. And we've sent this now, this will be our sixth year in January coming up. It's the same letter, nothing's been changed. And we're up to 500,000 in collections off of this letter for the last 5 years.
Wow. How did you get into this field?
Actually, I was in the service before I got into chiropractic. And I had got injured in the service and went to a chiropractor, got really good results, and that's how I got involved in this. I was one of these parachute guys, you know, that we had a night jump. I didn't see the ground coming up. It was pitch black. And I just hit really hard. And it was just one of those nights. It was overcast, and we were probably screwing around doing something, and we got hurt. And my wife had taken me to a chiropractor. And within 3 weeks, everything was fine. We got to talk, and next thing I know, I'm in school. Next thing you know, I'm working for the guy. Next thing you know, I got my own office. And that's when I met some famous guys like Dan Kennedy and everything. Got into the marketing part of it.
So you got into it from a personal experience of a screwed-up back, and they fixed it.
Right.
And then you were sold.
I'm sold. See, that's why nobody can talk me out of this. Like, chiropractic doesn't work. No, you'll never talk me out of it because I have the personal experience.
How do you know that it was really his treatment and not just time that healed it?
Well, yeah, I had it for 6 months. I mean, if it was going to heal by itself, it would have healed within 6 months. Like, I just had it today, and then 2 days later it was fixed, and then they'll say, well, how do you know it was a chiropractor and wasn't just, you know, bed rest or something? But, I mean, after 6 months, nothing was getting better, and I had tried the medication, the whole thing. So, I mean, it was not getting better.
At that time, before you even opened your office, did you have any of this marketing experience? Did you know what marketing was? Jay Abraham, Dan Kinney, any of these guys?
No, I did not. And I was one of the lucky ones because I got with Dan Kennedy within weeks after I opened. It was one of those things. I went to see him at a seminar, and there was probably 12 doctors at the seminar. It was in downtown Milwaukee back in 1985, and this is before he was even famous.
Was that his niche market he was marketing to?
I think he was working the chiropractic market back in the 80s. It's really funny because, like I said, there was probably 12 doctors there, and I'm probably the only one that got it, those 12, because I've never heard of any of them do anything since. But I could see the big picture with what he was doing. And what he taught, me enough that night. It was only like a two-hour seminar, maybe. But it was enough that night to see the big picture that this stuff does work. And I've been just accumulating his stuff ever since. So I bought his material. We've probably studied that little bit of material for a good 5 years. I did get his newsletter back then. I actually learned more by sending stuff into him for critique. So like I'd write an ad. And one of the things I talked about at his last seminar is that people really don't realize how much things have changed in 20 years. 20 years ago, we did not have a fax machine, a cell phone, computers, or anything like that. So if you wrote an ad, it had to be pretty good, or you had to pay $20 for the printer to set it up for you. And it was not uncommon for artwork to get billed $20 an hour for artwork. Back then, you really had to make sure that you had the ad the way you wanted it, because you were paying to set it up and everything. Today, I just wrap it out on a computer in between commercials or something on TV. But, I mean, it was a whole different mindset back then. If I had an ad, I would send it to him for critique before I would send it to the printer. You see what I'm saying? So I didn't have to pay for the artwork and everything to make a change. I didn't want to have to pay for the change. So a lot of times, I get these free coupons from him. And, you know, if you buy his stuff, you get a free critique coupon. And I would send this in. That's actually where I learned most of the stuff from, his critiques, the ads like that. So you're going to be the best chiropractor in the world, but if nobody knows about you, you're not going to have any business.
And you're in a pretty small town, aren't you?
Right, we have 2,000 people here.
How do you rate your chiropractic business compared to others around the country? Have you been able to do that?
I'd like to think we have one of the bigger ones. I think we have one of the more stable ones in the country.
And you have just one office there?
Right, we just have the one office.
How many employees do you have in your current office?
The current one, we have 1.5. We were up to about 7 or 8 at one time. Just through efficiency, we've eliminated a lot of jobs that we really didn't need. Currently, I work about 20 hours a week. Another lady that comes in 6 hours a week, she just does everything we don't want to do. She cleans, she makes our cookies, filing, anything we don't want to do, she does. We have a little toaster oven in the back, and we get that cookie dough in the tube. And I want that smell in the office.
You know, oh, yeah.
I want fresh cookies in there. And that works really well. That's probably one of the best marketing things we ever did. And we do that twice a week. She comes in to make those for us. And those are usually our busiest days. So,
where's the money being a chiropractor? What is a good patient worth over the year?
Our case average is about 2,000.
How do you get them in there in the first place?
It changes. You have to be really flexible on this. Back in the 80s, you could run a newspaper ad, and I equated it with a bear hook in a pond. They were so hungry that they'd bite on a bear hook back in the 80s. That same newspaper ad today won't bring anybody in. As insurance has changed and everything, and some states, they don't pay for work injuries, some don't pay for car accidents anymore. So you have to be really flexible with this. It just dawned on me, I've been practicing the 80s, 90s, and now the 2000s. This is like, oh my God, 3 decades here I've been playing this game. And I've seen so many changes. You know, today, I'm like the king of recall because I can go back to my mailing list and get new patients out of that from the people that have already been to me. I think it's very hard to go to a cold market and just get new business. If I ran a newspaper ad, I have not been real successful with those.
Most of your patients, are they covered by insurance?
Not anymore. Again, back in the 80s, we had about maybe 95% were covered. Today, it's probably about half.
When do people call a chiropractor?
If you're hurting, you'll probably call me.
Do you find that people who come to you have been to maybe another chiropractor before or the doctor, like in your personal situation?
Right. And not only that, but I have a lot of people that go, you're like the last resort. We've been through this test, that test, this doctor, we've been to Mayo Clinic, and they'll use it as a last resort also.
Let's say I've got back pain, and I respond to your ad. How would I see it if I'm one of your cold market?
We'll send out coupons to current patients or inactive patients. Here's what we found. If you're going to do this, if you're going to send the inactive people, no matter what business you're in, there has to be a reason what's in it for me. Because if you don't have it, if I just say, send me a new person, and there's nothing in it for you, you're not going to do it. Or if you do, you'll do it because the guy's really in pain and you're just trying to help him out. But we have found it better be something in it for you in order for you to send me somebody or for somebody to send you into me. So what we'll do is we'll send them a coupon. It may say, haven't seen you for a while. Here's a free visit. Come on back. We'll update your file or whatever. Oh, by the way, here's another coupon if you know somebody that has this, this, or this, you can come in and see us. Now, you may work with this guy, you may bowl with the guy, you may be related, it might be a brother-in-law or something, but chances are somebody you know goes to a chiropractor. If you think about the friends you have, somebody probably goes to a chiropractor. And if they would get one of those coupons in the mail and they knew that you had a bad back or headaches or something, they may give that to you. And that's how you would get in by us.
What other offers have you found to be successful over the last 30 years?
The hottest thing we have going right now is what I call charity marketing. And what we do in our town is we may run a $10 special where that'll be donated to the local fire and rescue squad. And what'll happen is that you would come in, pay $10, we work you up as a new patient, and then that $10 gets donated to the local fire and rescue, which is a volunteer in our area. And chances are you're either going to know somebody on the fire and rescue or be on the fire and rescue in our area. And what will happen is that they don't get any money from any other sources other than fundraisers. So we'll donate like $1,000 or whatever at a time, and then they can buy new uniforms or put that towards a new truck or whatever. And then that gets in the paper and then gets some PR out of that.
Do you make an effort to get some paper and PR out of it?
Oh, I'll tell you the secret to that. This is the only way I found that works. Here's the example. Let's pretend you're the fire chief, and I've just raised $1,000 for you. I would call you up and say, Michael, I have a check for you for $1,000. As soon as you can get over here with the newspaper to take a picture of us shaking hands, passing the check, you can have the check. You're the fire chief. How soon would you be over to my office to pick that up?
For $1,000 for new uniforms for the guys?
Yep.
I'd be right over there.
Yeah, I don't feel I should have to go through all this. I got the check. It's like you contact the newspaper. Plus, it looks better if they're contacting, say, come on, let's go get a picture. So not only do you raise the $1,000, give him a check for $1,000, now you get it in the paper, how wonderful you are, the PR. Again, through trial and error, I found that by passing the responsibility to him, it's a lot quicker. Just say, you can have the check as soon as you get this guy over here. And it may be just a matter of hours before they're over there with the newspaper. As soon as you hang up, they'll be on the phone. Either way, at least you're in the newspaper, and you can't buy that.
Tell me, can you think back, out of all the times you've done this, what the best newspaper write-up was from something like that?
Usually we donate 1,000 at a time, and I think we're up to about 10 grand now that we've donated over the years. And it was this one where I had my wife and family and just shaking the fire chief's hand. It was one of our first times that we did it. They made an effort to help us out, too. Now, here's another interesting thing. We have done fundraisers for the police department, got zero response. They hate the cops here, but they'll do everything for the fire department because they're the ones who give them the ticket and they arrest them or whatever.
Obviously, if you got into this stuff earlier, you knew the most important thing was to really work your database and to collect names and have a database. I mean, are you pretty serious about collecting and putting all your names into a database?
There's only two ways to get off of our list. You either have to request to be off or pass away. Or I guess it's three. You can move away, too. We just don't drop people unless they either request it, they pass away, or they move away.
Let's say I got one of your coupons from my friend who went in to see you, and my back's hurting, and I come in, and I walk in, and I smell those cookies. That's the first thing I notice. I smell chocolate chip cookies. What's going to happen? How are you going to treat me when I'm sitting there in the waiting lobby?
Well, see, we don't have a lobby. That's the whole thing. See, in our office, there's no waiting room at all. And so, like, our USP or what's unique about us is that you don't have to bring a lunch. You don't have to bring a book. This is the beauty of our system. Now, this is why we could eliminate a lot of this staff, because what will happen is the lady will tell you, you know, Michael, you can go to our website, and we have the forms there, the new patient forms. You can print those out at home, fill them out, and then bring them in. Now, on that has my consultation and a whole bunch of other things I would normally sit down and talk to you about. But you're actually doing this at home now. It's about 4 pages. And so you've just saved a half hour of my time by doing this at home. And we're getting about 4 out of 5 people do this at home now. And we're at the point now, if somebody doesn't have it done, we don't know what to do. Because we're so used to just taking them right in and processing these people. And now we have to wait for them to fill these forms out. We're kind of looking at each other like, oh, yeah, we remember this from the Stone Age when you used to have to wait for this. You got to picture this. You walk in, there's no waiting room. You have your forms filled out. You go back. We go ahead and do the processing whenever we need to do the exams and everything. And then depending on what's going on, we may or may not treat you that day. See, we have special time set aside, so it's not going to interfere with anybody else. So if you have a 12 o'clock appointment, we're right there at 12 o'clock for you. But the interesting thing is we may not even talk to you about the pain for the first 5 minutes. We'll just sit down and, you know, just get to know you a little bit. With you and me sitting down just talking. And really what it is, it's an interview. It's to see if you like me enough to stick around or if I want you as a patient.
Do you have a set of questions that you ask the patient every time?
Not really. What I'll do is I'll just sit down, just like this phone call. We'll just sit down and talk. And really what's happening is I'm interviewing you there to see if I want to work with you. If you're going to be a knucklehead or you're going to be okay. I might ask where you work to see what kind of job you have. And, you know, are you going to be a guy that's a long-haul trucker where I'm only going to see you once a month, or do you work in town here? And just kind of get to know the guy and bond with him a little bit. I just want to see what kind of person I'm dealing with. I want to find out what I'm dealing with. So you want to find out where this guy's coming from, real to him.
You want to try and find out where I may fit in to one of your programs.
Right. I want to find out what program is going to be best to you, but I also want to determine your personality type. Now, are you familiar with the work on that, with the expressives and analyticals and all that?
No, tell me about it. What are you looking
for? There's 4 basic personality types. Let's pick one at a time. There's what's called the amiable. This is the person who'll do anything you tell them. This is a little old grandma. They say, I need to see you. Come back here at 3 o'clock today. She'll be there. She'll do whatever you tell her. You got the analytical. He's going to want numbers. He wants to know what's his chances of getting better, how many other people you've seen, anything with numbers and data they want. You want handouts, leaflets, anything you got, brochures. The more data, the better for these guys. You got the expressive. This is the party guy. He says, I don't care how you do this. Just fix it and let's have a party doing it. These are the excitable people. And then you have your driver, which is the guy that comes in and says, I will tell you how this is going to be done. He's going to be in control. And so these are basically your 4 people, the main ones. But you can be an analytical with a little splash of expressive in the party a little bit. So I want to know which one of those 4 personality types I'm dealing with. Because if I'm dealing with a driver, I know that I'm going to have to let him believe that he's making decisions. Pretend you're a real strong driver, and I go, you know, Mike, I don't know. Maybe we should deal with this. You'll blow him out of the water. He's going to go crazy. What you do to a driver is you say, I either want to see you the middle of next week or Wednesday. You choose. He's happy because he gets to make a choice.
Are you able most of the time to pick that personality out?
Oh, I'm good at this. I'm very good at this.
Which ones do you like dealing with best?
I can work with them all. But to see, the thing is that if you're a real analytical, I have friends that are analytical that don't know about this. And if they get a driver in there, or better yet, an expressive. The expressives don't care about any kind of data at all. They just want to get better and get out of there and have a party doing it. So they keep handing them data, and these guys are getting blown out of the water, too, because they don't want data. They just want to have a party.
Do you have data for the analytical?
Oh, sure. I have to be what I call a chameleon. You have to be able to adapt to whatever person you're dealing with. So if you get the little old grandma in there, you might want to just put your arm around and say, hey, how's it going today, and the whole thing, and be real nice to her. All they want is people to be nice to them. So you have to be able to figure out within 2 minutes anybody's personality types. And once I know that, then I can base the treatment and everything else upon that.
We're interviewing the first 5 or 10 minutes. You're determining my personality.
Right. I like to think of it as bonding.
In most cases, will you do an exam right there?
When I feel we have enough rapport to get within 5 minutes, you can get the rapport going.
So you mold your presentation or what you think the patient needs, obviously in their best interest, and what you think you can do. What do you tell them? I'm in back pain. We've built rapport. You've identified my personality. You've done an exam. And what are you going to tell me?
What I don't do anymore, I don't try to sell you a huge program or anything that first day. I used to do that years ago.
How'd that go?
It was okay back then because, see, the insurance covered everything and life was good and they didn't care as long as somebody else was paying. But today, when you're paying it out of your pocket, it's harder to sell those bigger programs like that. So what I may do is I may just see you daily until I feel like we have enough of a bond there that it makes sense. Let's pretend I treat you today. I say, okay, let's just check tomorrow and see how things are going. And then let's say we get into 3 days of this, and it's not going real well. It's improving, but not real fast. Then I can come up to you and say, you know, Michael, this is probably going to take blah, blah, blah to get this handled. And at that point, in your head, you're ready to hear that. The first day, you don't want to hear that it's going to take a year and whatever else every day for the next 5 years or something. Or if you think that this is something small that should resolve fairly quickly, you don't want to hear a huge program either. So I have to be able to talk to the people, bond with them, see what's going on. And after about maybe 3 or 4 visits, then we'll go ahead and see where we need to go with a treatment program. Some people are done. They feel like they got it handled, and I feel it's handled. We're done. And then you can just come as needed or do something periodically. There's other people that say, look, this is going to take longer than we thought, so here's this. But see, at that point, it's real. They can see that, yeah, you're right, it's going to take a little longer.
And they've been there 2 or 3 times, so they've already, through their actions, basically told you they want treatment
right.
And agree.
Again, I like to think of it as more real, as opposed to the first date, because it almost be like getting married on the first date. It's like, yeah, I really like you, let's get married. Okay. Whereas if you have a few dates, see if this person is somebody even... Here's another thing. What if you recommend a year of care, and after 3 visits, you don't want to work with this one anymore? That's not cool either.
Is there an average amount of time you're recommending a patient come to you?
To be honest with you, everybody's different.
Everyone's different.
Yeah.
Once I've met with you 2 or 3 times, I'm in pain, you're going to make me a recommendation. Do you have like a silver, gold, platinum, or different packages already laid out in your head that you're going to present to me and you're going to fit me in one of those packages?
Pretty much, yeah. You'll give me a couple of choices. See, everything will be your choice. See, if you're a driver personality, we're going to give you choices. If you're the amiable, we'll probably just tell you which one's going to be best for you because they'll do it anyway.
And what do they go from, a week to a month?
It could go from a week to a month to 3 months. It depends on where you're at.
Are some of them every day, come in every day?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Really? If someone needs treatment, they come in every day or every other day will work?
It depends how bad it is, yeah.
When they come in, how much time are you spending? Once you've built the rapport, I sign up with one of your packages and I'm coming in every day for the next 3 months. How long am I there from the time I walk in to the time I leave? It's just a quick adjustment?
Here's what the research shows. You have 9 minutes in our business from the moment you walk in the door till the time you leave the door. So everything we do has to be within 9 minutes. And that includes your waiting time.
Wait, what do you mean?
The research shows that what people want is to be in and out that front door in 9 minutes.
In 9 minutes.
Everything that happens has to happen within 9. Now, if you go longer than 9 minutes, now you're cutting into their other time. You know,
I see.
Their personal time and stuff. Lessons for their kids and everything else.
Right, right. So it's in, bang, in and out.
Yeah. See, this is why we don't want a waiting room. Let's pretend you wait 5 minutes. Now we're only down to 4.
So when you're setting your appointments, are you setting them up every 15 minutes?
Oh, no, here's how we do it. See, now what we do is we have a thing called open adjusting where we have a bunch of tables. And what will happen is that we book at the top and the bottom of the hour. It's kind of like the airlines do. Again, if I give you an appointment, let's say at 10 o'clock, I know you'll be in somewhere between 10:02 to 10 after, somewhere in that 20-minute time frame. You may be exactly on time. You may be a little early, maybe a little bit late. So we will book at the top and the bottom of the hour. So your choices will be 10, 10:30. And again, at the same 20-minute period at the bottom of the
So you're booking every 30 minutes.
Yeah, but see, we can see up to 12 people at the top of the hour, 12 at the bottom of the hour.
And you're just going from person to person doing the adjustments.
Right, and then we have other therapy stuff and that we do too. We've tried to teach some of the people how to do that themselves.
Are you doing all the adjustments on the
people? Right, I'm doing all the work, yeah. This is the analytical in me, that I want to know what the people expect. And we also found in our profession that they'll give you about 4 hours total of their life. Now, what I mean by that is that if I'm going to come to you in my lifetime, I will give you 4 hours of my life to that doctor over time. So if I do a two-hour exam on this guy, that means in my lifetime I only have 2 more hours with him for the next 20 years or 30 years or whatever. So I'm thinking, okay, what I want to have is a thorough exam, but I don't necessarily want it to go real long. I want it to be intense, get it over with quickly so that I have more time for treatment over our lifetime here.
That's a pretty interesting stat.
Yeah, see, I don't want to use up all the time. See, if you have a three-hour exam, and you'll find people that have these huge exams that they only spend a couple visits and they're gone for life. And I don't want that.
Is that 4 hours within the chiropractic business? Or would you say with any other medical?
I don't know. I know that's what it is for our business. And I don't know what it would be for, like, real estate or clothing or some other business. I'm sure there's some kind of a stat for that. That if I go in to buy a suit, I don't want to be there for 4 hours trying it on. Maybe there's probably somebody did the research somewhere. That'll be a stat that says they'll give you this much time out of their life. So if you think about this, if I knew that I was only going to get 4 hours out of you total, then I would cut the treatment a little bit shorter. You know, I mean, I'd have a shorter treatment. It'd be, still be the quality thing, but we'd get rid of all the excess stuff because I want to get you in and out knowing that I don't want any wasted time with you. All I'm getting is 4 hours of
right.
my life with you. So let's cut out all the stuff that's not necessary, give you what you do need, and get you on with your life.
Well, let me ask you this, the money issue. You present to me a program, let's say, after our third visit, and I haven't paid anything for those first three visits, correct?
Oh, no, you're paying as you go.
Oh, I am?
Yeah.
Is there a set price of what I'm paying?
Let's just make up a fee. Let's say $40.
Okay, so I'm paying $40 every time for the first three times. You're going to present to me a treatment program.
Right.
And you're going to ask for all my money up front, or I guess it depends if it's insurance or what?
It depends. And then a lot of times we can make payments. You can pay so much a week or so much a month. But I mean, we'll work it out with you.
I mean, can that be a pain in the butt, collecting money?
It can be, but we do everything prepaid, so it's not too bad.
So you try and get everything prepaid.
Right.
Now, you sent me a collection of some of your recall letter series, how to milk your mailing list like a cash cow and live to tell about it.
Mm-hmm.
What is this? What are these here?
These are recall letters that we've done over the past about 4 years.
Now, what's a recall letter mean?
A recall letter is like you ask me a question, how often do you stay in contact with the person once they're done with care or whatever? I will send you something probably once a month. Now, I've already put you on my mailing list. You got anything from us in the mail yet?
No, not yet.
You should begin something this week then. We mailed it out maybe Friday last week. But anyway, the deal is that let's pretend I haven't seen you for a while for treatment.
We've gone through treatment, or I've finished my program with you.
Let's say you're done with the program, and you've chosen just to go on an as-needed basis or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't seen you for a while. So instead of just saying, well, forget you, you know, I'll send you like a newsletter, maybe some information, a postcard. The stuff I sent you in the mail here was a collection of recall letters we've sent over the last 4 years to people. And it's just to let them know, here's another interesting stat. The main reason that the people stay away from chiropractors that have been treated is because they think the chiropractor is mad at them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, now this, again, all this stuff I just find out through trial and error and by asking people. Mm. And they may think I'm mad at them because they didn't complete their treatment program. They may owe me some money. They didn't refer somebody when I, whatever. Who knows what reason?
Mm-hmm.
But they think I'm mad at them for something.
Yeah, that makes sense.
To me, it makes sense, but it doesn't. If they knew how hard it was to get business, why would you think I'd ever get mad at you? So anyway, what these letters tell the people is, say, look, we're not mad at you. Come on back, and if you do owe me money, come on back anyway. We'll collect it when you get in here. But the whole point is that we're letting them know we're not mad at them. And in marketing, they say that humor doesn't work. Don't try to be funny in the letter. But what I do in the letter is there's a whole system to what I do in these letters. And what I've done is I've made the staff if you want to humiliate somebody, humiliate the staff and not the doctor.
Right.
And let them take the brunt of it. Generally what the letter will be is, here's how we screwed up, here's how we're going to fix it, but don't tell Dr. Nielsen how we're going to do this or whatever. So everybody's getting these letters thinking they're doing something behind my back. I'm actually writing the letters. But anyway, a lot of the patients think these girls are writing the letters, and they're just amazed at how talented these girls are writing. And I'm like, yeah, I'm really lucky to have two that can write copies. But the whole point is to let them know I'm not mad at them. You know, here's something you can read. And we call this soap opera marketing because there's an episode every letter. It's like you're looking forward to the next. What are they going to do in the next episode? How are they going to screw up? What are they going to do next?
Is this theme been done before, this soap opera theme?
Well, I got it from the Lucy Show, actually. That's where I originally saw it. I said, you know what? I don't like the Lucy Show, but I was watching it with my kids one day. And I never thought she was that funny, but anyway, that's a whole other thing. But
yeah.
I'm watching this. I'm going, like, she screws up something. You can't tell Ricky. And this is how she always gets out of it at the end. She always makes good at the end of the program. Then you can't wait to see how she's going to screw it up the next episode, right?
Uh-huh.
And so that's really where I got the idea from this. So we could actually make a series out of this instead of just one letter or whatever. It's not like you're going to get one of these letters every month. It's whenever we have a good one that I think is going to work. It may be once a month, maybe once every 2 months. There's no set thing. Whenever I get the inspiration.
Well, that's good. I mean, you came up with this concept on your own from the Lucy Show. I thought maybe this was a technique that Dan Kennedy taught or something.
Well, we talked about that. He wrote about it in his newsletter, and this is something that we had talked about. When I told him this is what I did, blah, 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 and then he wrote that up in the newsletter like that. And I'm sure it's been done before.
Sure, but think of the Lucy Show, how popular that is, or how popular it was.
Right.
And maybe that's part of what drove the success of the show.
Well, it's the same theme, though. And it's just like, she all screwed it up, didn't tell Ricky, the whole thing. And this is like, well, we can use this. In one of the books I wrote, I talked about professional wrestling, and it's the same deal. You have a good guy and a bad guy. The crowd roots for one or the other. And then all of a sudden they change. Now they're bad. Now they're good. Now they're bad. You know what I mean? They go back and forth. And I don't know if you watch professional wrestling, but it's great for marketing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of lessons there.
Yeah, I bet. Do you use a picture in every one of your letters? Just
we,
about?
We found that those work the best.
Oh, you've got a great collection here. So let's say you've got 100 patients in 1 month. Are these letters going out sequentially, depending on the time I came in, or when you have a situation, a letter you want to send out to all your past customers, you'll knock one out and send it out to all of them?
It's pretty much like that. You may get a newsletter this month and one of these letters next month.
Now, I saw that PDF you sent me, those pictures are in color. The booklet here, when you send out a letter, is it a black and white of the photo?
It's a black and white, yeah.
And I like that type. It really looks like it was typed on a regular typewriter. Where is that? Was it, or is this a type
no,
from a...
No, there's a place on the internet you can go. It's called oldtypewriterfonts.com. You go there, it has like a gazillion old typewriter fonts, and there a lot of them are free. And the one I have, is it has like the B and the G filled in, like Mom's Typewriter. And I think that's the name of this font. It's called Mom's Typewriter.
Oh, this is awesome.
We had one font. It's called DOA, which means dead on arrival. And it's so bad, it looks like this old hacked-up typewriter. And so we downloaded that, used that in a couple letters. And, like, the capital D doesn't work. So all through the letter, you just have a small D no matter what. And we actually made a letter that said that this Nielsen was so cheap, he won't even get us a real typewriter. We have to use this one. And when you see the font, it looks like they banged it out on some old beat-up Smith Corona.
It really does. And I'm noticing a lot of these letters. Do you try and keep them all one-pagers?
It depends. But, like, say what you need to say. And a lot of times, if I can get it on one page, I prefer that. But the most recent one we did, I tried to get it on one, I just couldn't. And so that's a two-page. There's one in here also that has a telegram. It took me a couple of days on the internet, off and on, to find the old telegraph font or telegram font. It does exist. And I had to pay $20 to get it. It wasn't a free one. But it made it look like it was, like, pasted on the page, like they had pasted this.
A telegram.
Yeah, like a telegram thing where they used to paste the words on, and it makes it look like that. And it really hurt because I had to pay $20 for that because I'm so used to it.
Where did you find that? You remember?
I think it was the same place, but if you type in, like, old telegram.
Oh, there it is, overnight telegram.
That's it, yeah. We had to find out what a telegram looked like. I had to research what telegrams looked like. I had to go back to, like, the turn of the century to really find the ones I wanted because I wanted them to make it look like this is on parchment paper and the whole thing.
It was like a postcard.
It was maybe like 5x7 we did. It's like a half a sheet of paper, I think we made it.
Was it in an envelope, or did you
put it?
So you put it in an envelope.
Well, what I did was I went to, like, the office supply, and they have, like, a parchment thing. You can get the paper, the stationery, and the envelope. You can buy it. And that's what we did. We made it parchment because I couldn't find telegram paper in the envelope. It just doesn't exist anymore. So
mm-hmm.
Well, the parchment may be the closest. And so then what we did was we sent this in an envelope that was sealed. But what we always try to do with the letters is make them congruent. So if we got this telegram, we want you to have the telegram, too. And what we did is, you know, we sealed it, and then we opened it to make it look like this was the actual telegram we got. So we wanted everything to be congruent with, like, if we find some piece of paper that's crumpled, stuffed in a desk drawer, you get that crumpled piece of paper.
A lumpy mail.
Whatever. It's about whatever we have, we want you to experience the same thing. There's a letter in here that was burnt. And this is one of my favorite ones,
mm-hmm.
where we actually burned the letters and put them in the envelope. So when you open them, you got pieces of ash in the bottom of the envelope.
Oh, that's hilarious.
What I'm saying is, if we found this burnt letter, we want you to see what we found. And we want you to think you're the only one getting this, even though it says dear friend. But you feel like you got the same letter that we found. And we want everything to be as authentic as we can. So that's why we do it that
way. So who's handling all the mailing every month? Your staff?
Right, they handle that.
You don't farm it out or anything?
No, actually, I'm kind of a metaphysical guy, and I think that you can do that,
mm-hmm.
but I'm more into the thing, like the touchy-feely thing, like I put my energy in, they put their energy in, they're focused on new patients or whatever, recalling patients, and I try to keep their mind on track, and I really believe in putting your own energy and creativity into stuff, and you just can't get that by farming it out.
And do you write all your letters?
Right, yeah, this is all my stuff.
So have some of these been critiqued by Kennedy?
Yeah.
So
usually what I get back is like, why do you bother sending these in? There's nothing I can tell you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that makes me feel good.
He really likes them. So how many are you mailing out every month? Is that something I can
ask? Well, here's what we've been finding. We just mail out 100 a week because this way we can hand address them.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What have you found to be effective when you're mailing? Let's say it's a one-page, 8.5x11. Do you do it on white paper?
I'm the cheapest guy you're going to meet, so everything's going to be black and white with me.
Okay.
So you're going to get a black and white letter. You will get the envelope with the return, we call it the corner card or whatever, you know, with the return address. We use the live stamp, the
mm-hmm.
real stamp. We hand address these.
And you have your girls in the office,
right.
Too.
This is what they do during downtime. There's going to be times during the day they have nothing to do. And over the years, we try to avoid the staff mutiny, because if they have too much time, then they get together.
Yeah.
I'm not paying them enough, and then the next thing they're coming to me with problems, like they want a raise or they're going to quit. We've had that. So this way I just keep them busy so they don't have time to get together. And I'm really lucky because I can abuse them pretty good in these letters. I can make fun of them and stuff like that. And they love the attention. They love the recognition.
Right.
They can go anywhere in town, and they're like, hey, what's happening? You know, what are you guys doing this time? So they love the recognition they get from this. But anyway, so they'll be doing the hand addressing. And that's pretty much it. It's just like a real letter you'd send to a friend.
And so you're mailing out about 100 a week. Have you been able to test the response on the different letters?
Oh, sure. We've been really lucky with this because we've got somewhere between 20 and 35% response on all these letters. Everything that you have in this book is 20% or more response.
So you picked out from your collection of all the...
Actually, no, we've just been lucky. This is my entire collection, but we've been real lucky because we've always got... like right around 20 with this.
That's incredible.
It is. But if you think about it, if we're giving you a free offer or something, there's really no reason not to. I don't want to get a big head about this because, as you know, 2% is really good.
Right.
But if you think about it, they know me. They've done business with me before. The whole thing. It's not a cold market by any means.
Anyone in any business could take this theme, this concept, in these letters, in this personalization, in the photo of your staff, in the headline, in the offer, just to let their customers know that you're not mad at them.
Right. And I think that's the bottom line of this whole thing. A lot of times you can do this. Let's pretend you're in real estate. You buy the house, you do the transaction, and that's it. Okay, you got my money, so what? You got your commission. That's the last you hear of them. But wouldn't it be nice just to get something in the mail periodically that says whatever, here's what we're doing, or here's a little newsletter or something, just to stay in contact with them. So that let's pretend... if the average American moves every 3 years anyway, all you have to do is just wait. They're ready to move it.
That's true. Now, have you tried using telemarketing opposed to direct mail to keep in contact with the customers?
I've never done that.
How about the voice technology that Jeff Paul talks about?
You know what? I've never done that either. I guess because our town is so small, it's so easy to...
Right, it's not hard.
It's not hard for us just to stay in contact by mail. Another thing we do a lot of is inserts in the newspaper. We can blanket the whole town with an insert. 2,000 inserts will blanket the whole town.
Is that pretty cost effective?
For us it is. It costs $35 for 1,000.
That's not bad.
That's about 2 cents a piece.
Which is your main newspaper?
Free weekly paper that they put out.
That's like the Penny Saver.
Exactly.
Is it the Penny Saver you're doing it with?
No. It's similar, but it just has a different name.
It's a different kind of offer than these letters, right?
Yeah, that would be a different... See, now, yeah,
that's for generating for business.
See, now, if I send these letters to a cold market, they think I'm some kind of...
Oh, market. Right, of course. This collection of letters that I have here in front of me that we're talking about, that's for your warm market.
Oh, people that know us.
Yeah, it's a good drip campaign to keep in touch with your people.
Right, and they know the girls, they know me. But if I would send this to a cold market, they think this guy's lost it.
Well, let's talk more about these letters. Some of these letters are just to say hi. What are some of the different offers and some of the approaches in these letters? What are we trying to do besides just keep in touch with the clients that you've treated?
What we're trying to do is get them back in our office and then bump them up to some kind of a treatment program. Now, there are going to be people that are going to come in and hose you. They're going to come in just for the free visit.
What percentage would you say in your town?
About 2%. There's not that much.
Just part of doing business.
It's part of it. You made them a free offer, they'll do anything free.
Right.
Come in. And that's okay, because that's what you asked them to do. They did what you asked them to do. Now, what I would prefer to have happen is, like, you come in, and then let's pretend I treat you, and I say, you know, Mike, you and I both know this may take a couple more visits. This is not going to resolve with one visit. And you're going, yeah, that's what I figured. So at that point, we may determine some kind of a treatment program for you. So I got you back in the door. Now I bumped you up to some other service. Had I not sent you the letter, this is like found money now. That's the whole gimmick. See, and this is what the doctors don't understand. And a lot of the other people out there, they think like, well, that's just stupid. You're just giving away your time and visits and everything. I said, no, you're not. You're trying to bump them up to some other service. But you cannot do it unless you get them back in the door.
Besides, let's say I came in, my back was screwed up. You took care of that. It's feeling pretty good. I haven't heard from you in 6 months. I've been getting your letters. I come on in just to say hi or for one of your maybe adjustments just for the hell of it. Now, what else can you sell me if you've already pretty much solved my back problem?
Oh, we may have vitamins. We may have like a special pillow you can sleep on at night, inserts for your shoes.
You're doing orthotics?
Yeah, like an orthotic thing we can do.
What else? How about massage?
We don't have massage, and I'll tell you the reason I don't. It's real big in chiropractic right now.
Mm-hmm.
I have not found a masseuse that has been around more than 4 months. They all think it's real easy work. Within 4 months, they quit. And the other reason is that what I saw happening, we have offered it in the past, but you come in, and let's say you have $40 in your hand, and you have a choice of either having somebody rub your back for $40 or having me adjust you for $40. I mean, it's not like we have $80 coming in. It's one or the other. And I think I'm confusing the people here because I move bones. So if you come in, you know you're going to get your bones moved. And then what we'll do is, he said, here's a list of some other ladies that do massage. If you're interested in that, go see them. And it just works out easier.
No, you keep it simple.
I don't have any room for them besides. Mm-hmm. I don't. All of our rooms are...
And it's more staff and more headaches.
Whatever.
So you're selling supplements?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of supplements do you offer?
We have vitamins, we have weight loss.
You buy them wholesale and sell them retail. Is that a pretty good income for you on the vitamins?
It's okay. You got to be real careful with that, too, because you don't want to be selling them a vitamin that they can buy at Walmart. I don't want to sell you a vitamin for $30, and then tonight you go to Walmart and find it for $9.95.
Mm-hmm.
You have to watch what you sell.
Are you with any of the multi-level companies?
We've done the multi-level stuff. Again, you have to be careful with that.
Because right.
If they find out it's multi-level, then they'll just go behind your back and join. So you really shot yourself in the foot with that.
So I'm just trying to get an idea. You want to get them in for an upsell. Okay, you send out 100. You get 20 people in. What kind of numbers are we talking about? Out of those 20 people who come in for whatever the offer is, what kind of income can you pull out of that mailing?
What we've been doing is for every $50 we invest, we get about $2,000 back.
For every $50 you invest?
Right.
100 letters is only going to cost you...
37 for the postage.
Going to cost you about $50.
Right, $50. We'll get that back.
And by the time you've run them through the visit, it's bringing in $2,000.
Yeah, pretty much.
You can't do that on the stock market.
No, and I try to teach this. When I go to seminars and I teach this, nobody... you see this? And he's like, well, I don't want to pay $50 a week for advertising. I'm like, you're not paying it. Don't you get it? This is self-funding. The first 50 you put up, but then you get it back, plus, then just reinvest for the rest of your life. I've been doing that for 20 years.
How long does it take to go through that cycle from the day the letter mails out to the time you just about see 90% of those 20 people?
Here's what we do. We mail them on a Saturday.
Why Saturday?
Because, see, in our town, it hits the next business day. If you're within 100 miles of our town, it'll hit the next business day. So I want it to hit on a Monday. Why have it hit on a Friday when they're going to be gone for the weekend and forget about it? So we'll mail them on a Saturday, but then we'll have it expire the following Friday. But I don't mean like the next Friday, but the one after it.
So 2 weeks.
So you have a good 2 weeks to get in.
And you always put an expiration.
Right. Oh, yeah. Nothing happens in life without a deadline.
Did you learn that lesson?
I learned that lesson. So it's a good 2 business weeks that we give them. So it's like 10 days.
So you could cycle this in about 2.5 weeks. But
right.
They have to bring that thing in within 2 weeks.
Oh, usually within 1 week. They're already coming in Monday. As soon as the mail hits, they're coming in. I just talked last week to somebody about this. They were asking me about this stuff. I said, I don't know if it's taught anywhere, but the more you do this, the better your response is. What I mean by that, if you just did one of these letters, and then did another one a year later, I don't know what the response would be on that. But if you do this systematically, you're consistent with this, it seems like the more we do this, the better the response gets every time. Because you've conditioned them to open it up. They're looking for some kind of offer or whatever. There's always some kind of offer in there.
They see it, believe me. The way you're mailing it, they're opening it and they're reading it. I would think in this format, most of them are reading it. They may not react on it, but they're waiting for that.
They're ready.
Right, you got to get them in at the right time.
It's so interesting because you get to the point after 4 years of doing this pretty consistently, you know which ones are going to work, which one needs to be improved. But the response seems to go up a little bit with each one because I think that they're conditioned to seeing this.
Make me a recommendation. You're educating people about your system, right? Let's say I'm a real estate agent,
okay,
and I do have a customer list. I have purchased your collection of letters, how to milk your mailing list like a cash cow. Am I allowed to, when I purchase this, to convert the letters to make them fit for my real estate?
Sure.
And is that hard to do?
I wouldn't think so. Again, I was at a seminar about July, and this lady had an assistant there that looked like a little grandma lady. I said, why aren't you using her in your advertising? My God, this could be like Mother Smith says this. Have her holding up an apple pie or something like that. I mean, everybody in their office knew who this was. I said, use her. She's a celebrity, my God. Look at her. She's a perfect grandma figure. Then all of a sudden you can see the wheels turning, like, yeah, we should be using her. And you can use your staff. You can use your kids. If you've got kids at home, they're perfect. We've used our kids over the years for our inserts in the newspapers and things. There's so many different ways you can do this.
So how many years back does this collection of letters go? And about how many are...
This goes back to about maybe year 99, 2000, something like that.
Do you know exactly how many letters are in here?
I know there's more than 20. I've never counted them. Actually, I did something kind of smart. I saved everything.
Yeah, that is
and
smart.
So I said, hey, this is a pretty good idea. We'll just put these on a little booklet. I must be one of the only chiropractors that actually saved this stuff.
No, that's great. I mean, look, what you're telling me is you've got a collection of letters that it's taken you 30 years to put together, and you've got a little money-making system for your chiropractic business. Every time you invest 50, as long as you take them through the system, you pull out 2,000.
That's what we're doing, right, yeah.
And you've been doing that for?
20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
None of it would have happened unless you mailed the letter, right?
Right.
So you've got really the combination of words, the combination of the offer, the headline, the picture, the reasons why, the offer. This is really the key that makes this whole thing work.
What's even better is you don't even have to get it right. I mean, it's like just got to get it out there. Because if you realize that your competitor or whatever, they're not doing anything. So whatever you do is going to look good. I have a dentist. In 10 years, I've never got a thing from her. I would be so excited if I got anything, even if it was wrong.
Except a postcard when your next appointment is.
Oh, yeah, I get that. And I have to fill that out myself on the way out of the visit.
That's right. Yeah, me too.
That's all I get from her. I tell people, I said, don't overanalyze this. You don't have to get it right. Just get it out there. You'll learn over time what to do, what not to do. But the thing I like about these is the grunt work is out of it. It's all done.
If someone was to hire Dan Kennedy to review all the letters that you've had him review in this collection, what do you think it would cost him?
It wasn't just these letters. I mean, I've had ads and postcards, and I'm guessing probably $50,000.
$50,000.
Yeah. Here's something that's kind of interesting. This very first letter on the book here.
Yeah, let's talk about it. The very first one.
This is a $500,000 letter.
Let's see, which one are we talking about? What's the headline?
It says, we want to give you a free visit. It's got like two red tickets on the bottom.
We want to give you a free office visit and say to Dr. Nielsen, we told you so. All right, tell me the story about this letter.
I'm going to have to give you credit on this one. I bought a packet of old Halbert letters from you years ago. It was on the last page of one of his newsletters where this guy was selling million-dollar equipment. And the letter was that my wife says that I shouldn't send it to you on this stationery because I'm selling you $1 million equipment. And she said this letter will never work and blah, blah, blah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what show I'm talking about?
It was the guy selling to schools, I think. He was.
I can't remember what it was anymore.
He was selling my desk and office equipment, I don't know, to schools. I think I know what you're talking about.
But anyway, I got it from that packet that I bought from you. And I'm looking at this and I'm going like, okay, first question, how can I make this work for me? So what I did was, instead of his wife, I put my staff in there. And Dr. Nielsen says that we need to send you fancy stationery and all this stuff, and you're probably going to throw the letter away and blah, blah, blah. So we first mailed this in the year 2000, and we got 30 new people in January from it. Now, those are worth $2,000 each, so $60,000 right there.
When did you mail it?
In January. The reason for this letter was we wanted to mail a letter in January because their deductibles for insurance were due, they overspent for Christmas, their taxes were due. If they were on any kind of treatment program, we didn't want them to bail out because of money. Let's just keep the momentum going. So the whole theory was, look, we know you're broke, come on in anyway. It's on us. And so we gave them two red tickets that were stapled to the bottom, just like you get at a carnival or a fair. And we got those at the office, probably like $3 a roll.
You staple them on there?
We just stapled them on. And what happened is that one ticket gave them a free visit, see what's in it for them. And the other one you give to a friend, and for like $10 they can come in as a new patient or something like that. And so we mailed that out.
How many did you mail, 100?
We sent it to the whole list. So that was like 3,000 we sent that first year.
3,000 you sent out in January.
Right. Now we spread that out a little bit. So basically we made a ton of money in January, which is notoriously a slow month. But it's kind of a seasonal letter. How long do you milk this letter out? So we said, well, let's just do it for January this year. And then what we've done, though, is we decided just to make this our January letter because it's topical, meaning it's like the topic is this brand new year. We know you overspent, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to still be doing that in March. So let's just keep it for January. Right after it goes out immediately after the new year's, like January 2nd it goes out. And we've sent this now, let's see, 2001, 2003, 2004. This will be our sixth year in January coming up. I still don't know about the letter and the whole thing. It's the same letter. Nothing's been changed. And I think we're up to $500,000 in collections off of this letter just from that one time in January for the last 5 years.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is off this one letter. But I'm thinking, like, it should have worked because it was in Halbert's newsletter, and this guy made money off of it, too. All we did was tweak it for our business.
Right. So anyone could tweak this.
Yeah. You know, I don't want them, obviously, to take it word for word, but, I mean, you can make it fit your business.
Absolutely.
And don't use my staff's pictures or anything. But that kind of a deal, there's no reason you can't make this work for any business. But that's what's so neat about this is, like, I can get something from you, tweak it to my business, and then make it work.
This truly is. It's a $500,000 letter.
Yeah. And you know what? We're going to run it again, and I told Kennedy about this, and he says, why wouldn't you keep it going? We may run this until it dies. It's like if it gets to the eighth year and nobody's responding, okay, we may pull it. Until then, we're just going to let the market tell us. But you know, if you read the letter, though, there's no reason why you wouldn't come in. There's nothing that prevents you from coming in. It's a free visit. We know you overspent the whole thing, and come on in anyway.
Right, that's great. And that's the first letter in the collection.
Yeah.
Do you have any other stories that stick out in your head about any of these letters? That's a great story right there.
We have one where the girls are posing with scuba equipment. I was just going to go diving one weekend.
All right, I got it. And I see a lot of these letters, they say staff memo.
Yeah, that's actually through trial and error. That's the theme now.
Staff memo.
Yeah, because we want them to, when they see this, it's like, oh, here's another one of these letters.
Okay.
That's kind of our trademark for that. It's a staff memo.
All right, I see the picture of Marie and Steffi. Check out their scuba equipment, even though Dr. Nielsen is going diving without them.
Right, and so what they're doing is, because they can't go diving with me, they're going to show me by giving you a free visit. I come into the office with my scuba equipment. I say, put this on, I'll take a picture. And they never question it. And so that was just an idea I had one summer. I'm just flipping through this here, see. We talked about the burnt letter. It's a couple ones after that. We found a burnt notebook. We don't know how it got burnt, but if you remember, you can tell us how it. We ripped a page out of that burnt notebook, and it's a couple pages later. You can't really see it in the hard copy.
Okay.
We burned the corners off the page. We burned a hole in the middle of it. It's just a hand-drawn thing, and we just had them in the back burning these up with a torch, and they got a kick out of that.
That's hilarious.
That's the one where they actually put it in an envelope, and they could get the pieces of the burnt paper and stuff like that in there. A lot of these are, look, they're really unprofessional. I mean, if you look at these, you go, oh, my God, how could he send these out?
No, but you know what? They're down to earth. They're homey.
And a lot of these are hand-drawn doodles and stuff like this. But see, what they're trying to do is say, look, this is like some rough draft of an ad Dr. Nielsen had 20 years ago. We found it. We thought it was kind of cool. We're sending it to you just to share it with you. And, oh, by the way, you can come in for a free visit for reading this letter. There's another one where we finally got a website, and they all got these Harry Potter glasses, like they're really smart. One Easter, they forgot the mailing, so I made them put ears on, like little bunny ears, so they would remember next year.
So is this lumpy mail stuff?
It could be. I have found that, to be honest with you, the red ticket thing works the best. And then we also use a prescription pad. I had to research that, too, what a prescription pad looked like on the Internet. We designed that. And then on the prescription pad, we'll make some kind of offer for them. So it's congruent. It's a doctor thing. Here's mm-hmm. the prescription. We have a lot of stuff, crumpled letters. They'll each crumple these up, put them in an envelope. That's your lumpy one. We had one with earplugs, because if you're tired of hearing your people mm-hmm. or your friends whine, here's some earplugs.
Do you have a source of lumpy stuff, like the earplugs? And
I get it from Mitch Carson, you know?
Yeah, I know Mitch. So he's got a good supply of all that stuff.
Yeah, he can get, there's other sources, but Mitch is good. It depends on the thing. One time I was at the fair, and everybody had these little bracelets on for to prove that they had paid their admission. I said, hey, that'd be a good thing. So we sent those out in a letter that they had to wear their wristband in, and then they could get a free visit. My daughter graduated. When she graduated college, we went to the Oriental training and got little keychains with those little graduation caps on, and we sent those out as a lumpy mail for them. And if you would come in with that keychain, you got a free visit to prove that you had it. There's one thing here where we actually took, we call it transparency, like a black and white transparency.
Right.
And what we did was we did reverse printing on that.
Is this that Mitch Carson mailing? There's one that the dentist has done it, and it's like a reverse on the transparency.
Right, that's the one that Bill Glazer did.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, that's the one that I sent it to Bill, and he swiped it and made it for him. And basically, it's just a transparency, but if you do reverse printing, it makes it look like an X-ray. And that's probably our best one to date.
Yeah, that's cute. I've seen that.
And then let's see what else we have. We did something with DVDs where we got this load of DVDs came in last Christmas. We don't know how we got them, but if you refer somebody, we'll give you one of them. And those cost me, I think, $30 each, and I think we charged them like $39 or $49 for the visit.
What was it a DVD of?
The DVD player.
Oh, DVD player.
I'm sorry.
I got you.
And I think what you did is you referred a friend in, and the first visit was like $49, and my cost was like $30, so we made a couple bucks on that deal.
Here's one. Why the attached sponge is your passport to a free office visit during March 2004?
Now, that one, you don't get the full effect of that one because we used a bolt on there that weighed about a pound almost. It was a huge bolt. It was about 2 or 3 inches long. It had this little tiny sponge on it. It was like just a regular little kitchen sponge, but we had this huge bolt. And the gist of it was that I sent them to Kinko's with a bunch of stuff to mail out, and they dropped it in the snow up here in Wisconsin. And then they said, what are we supposed to do with this? And then they had used a sponge or something to blot them off. And then they thought that would be a good idea to send people a sponge to show them what they used to clean these letters off. And then they asked Dr. Nielsen how they should attach it. And he says, I don't care if you use a bolt.
Uh-huh.
So they go to the hardware store and they buy this huge bolt and put it through the letter. Did was they put a plastic bag, like a gallon bag, with the letter in that smudged from the water. And we sprayed them with Windex to keep them moist. I got that from the big fat Greek wedding thing. That's how I got that idea. And we sprayed them. And so when you got this letter, it actually came in a box. You got this sponge bolted to the letter. And then at the end of it, there was a plastic bag with a wet letter in. Again, congruent. This was the wet letter that they found on the ground. And
right.
That was it.
So the bolt had the nut, it was screwed on? Like you had the bolt and then the nut?
Right, all through the whole thing.
That's great. This is a wealth of great ideas. I really appreciate you sharing this.
That's the end of our interview with Dr. Greg Nielsen. I hope you have found it helpful, and for more great interviews like this, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.